Hello and welcome to episode 1279 of The Sleeper and the Bust. It is Friday, April 5th. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined this morning by Justin Mason. Justin, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Not too bad. It's only been, 15 hours since we talked. So yeah. Unfortunately, in that time, my Tigers lost their undefeated streak.
This is your fault.
The first thing I thought, I was all like,
I saw that the Tigers lost the second game, and the Mets therefore won their first game of the season. And I was like, this is Paul's fault.
It's not my fault.
Got all braggadocious on an undefeated season.
I didn't get braggadocious. I was excited, and I don't regret a thing. I was happy. Obviously, we're not going to go 162.
You hear that, Tigers fans? This is Paul's fault. Tweet
Cry
at Paul.
About it. Cry. At yeah, sport. Tweet at me. Bring it.
Be like, this is your fault. You did
Do
this.
It. I don't care. I will make fun of you. Okay. I will make fun of you if you do that. And I didn't jinx Imanaga's no hitter by talking about it. Look, if Vin Scully says that he doesn't believe in jinxes, that's good enough for me. Jinxes are stupid. Anyway, we're going to talk some pitchers today. We talked some hitters yesterday, and we're just going to do the two start slate because it's pretty deep. And it has some of these, you know, kind of fast start guys. That's what we talked about yesterday with the hitters, guys that were off to quick starts that, you know, we're kind of deciding whether we're in or out. There's some overlap of some of the guys I would have covered with pitchers. So let's just do the two start slate because, like I said, it is pretty robust. Don't have too many off days. I don't think there's anybody with the dreaded 5-game slate next week. I think everybody has at least 6 and then a lot of 7.
There's one team that has a 5-game slate. Oh, Milwaukee, who? Maybe? Milwaukee or Minnesota?
No, they both play 7.
Okay.
You sure that wasn't this week?
I'm pretty sure because I did a – I do a 20 things to watch every week over on Fantasy Pros.
Milwaukee played 5 this week.
Oh, maybe that was it.
So I think you're running your weeks together.
I am running my weeks. This is what happens when we record at 6:30 in the morning.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so early for Justin on the Friday episode, y'all. So you got to give him some leeway on some things. But yeah, let's just dive into it. We go by team as listed by RotoWire because I use their thing for the two start. So we start with Arizona and go all the way down. And I skip the guys that, you know, we don't need to tell you that we're going to start Zach Gallen. And yes, that includes the start in Colorado. We're still starting. I mean, unless you want to say it differently, Justin. But yeah, so the aces I'm not including here. Maybe if they were like wobbly through two starts and they had two really difficult starts, I'd include them. But otherwise, no, we're golden. Like even Framber Valdez gets Texas twice. Who cares? He's starting. So we start in Atlanta, and they've got two starters. They both have the same matchups. Charlie Morton and Reynaldo Lopez get the Mets and a trip to Miami. So a pretty good setup. Are you starting both? And obviously, if you have distinctions on league types and whatnot, I want to hear that as well. So what are we doing? Let's start with Charlie Morton, old ground Chuck. Where are we at?
I mean, I think you're starting both these guys. I'm a little bit more concerned on Charlie Morton than I am on Reynaldo Lopez. I don't know if I would have said that prior to the season. I would have probably said I'm concerned on both of them, but Reynaldo looked so good in that first start that I think...
Revenge game for him.
Yeah, this is an easy start for Reynaldo Lopez. But Morton, you know, what he did last season, kind of a lot of smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. I know he got through the first start, you know, pretty decently. But again, smoke and mirrors. I just think that there is going to be a lot more blowups this year for Charlie Morton. So I'm a little bit more concerned with Morton, but I think both these matchups are so good. With the Mets struggling and Miami struggling offensively, I don't know what league type you would be sitting these guys.
Yeah, they're 10 team considerations even, and I'm starting them in the deeper formats than that with Morton and Lopez. And yeah, if you're streaming in a tenner, you can consider both. Now, obviously, it depends what's available, and you can make your decisions based off of that. But a lot of consideration here for these two. You guys know my long-term interest in Reynaldo Lopez. It has not dwindled at all. And I'm eager to see what he can do with a two-step here. What about Cole Irvin with a trip to Boston and then hosting Milwaukee? You know, he is one of those guys that is like a team streamer in 15s, maybe kind of a standard streamer in 10s and 12s, especially now because pitching in Baltimore is a positive. So you can actually say, you know, oh, save him for his home starts. Not terribly dominant, you know, in terms of strikeouts, 20% K rate last year was a career high. Trip to Boston, a little bit nerve-wracking, though. Where you at on Cole Irvin?
Yeah, he was like the talk of spring training with his like increased velocity, and the velocity is still higher than it was last year, but not nearly as what it was when we saw like at the beginning of spring when people were going crazy. So he was like throwing 95 and stuff. He's fine. Like I don't know that I want to start him at Boston in many leagues, but I know like you and I were talking about like in my main event, like I've got five relievers on this team and I probably need to drop two of them just because I don't want to fall behind on strikeouts early on in the season. And like we were talking through the options on my wire and there's just not many there.
They were scant.
So if you are in a 15 team league, you may end up starting Cole Irvin, but I would be really, really scared to be quite honest.
Yeah, I think it's really only a 15-team consideration for Irvin this week. You know, Boston's not exactly ripping the cover off the ball, but I don't really want to take him to Fenway. And, you know, I still have some love for that Milwaukee offense. I don't think it's a complete pushover.
It started off well, too. Like, this has not, like, been like a, you know, with we talked about Bryce Terang yesterday. Chris Hill, it's like he's in
Hoskins is raking.
Hoskins is great. Where are you at on the Hoskins drama with the Mets? Like, did you see this?
Yeah, with the slide and everything. I mean,
the slide was a little late, but like, I don't know why they were getting all pissy.
Exactly. Like, but so the only thing that I give some credit to McNeil for on it, because he was the one driving it, was he said that there were some previous issues with Hoskins because, you know, he played in Philly, so they are rivals or whatever. So it was maybe a straw that broke the camel's back type of thing with him, because that slide in and of itself didn't seem worthy of that kind of
response.
Angst. Yeah. So I was a little bit surprised by that, but then he said again that they had history, and I'll take him at his word on that. And then, you know, you deal with it.
But a lot of the history is the Mets hitting Hoskins and Hoskins getting pissed for him hitting him.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Ate against them, by the way. Like he relished the a-hole, you know, the villain role, and then you know, got Johan Ramirez suspended and just cooked. Mm-hmm. Hit another homer later. Like he did not care about it. So yeah, I didn't think that they really needed to go. I didn't think that it needed to be all that. I think McNeil kind of let that get bigger than it was. And then Hoskins just kept his cool and said, okay, fine. I'm just going to beat y'all every time at the dish.
Exactly. So, Did you see the John Boy breakdown of, so like John Boy was like, you know, played the interview of McNeil, and, you know, McNeil was like, oh, you don't do that. You don't try to hurt people on, you know, or break up double plays like that. And
oh god,
so John Boy did like a breakdown of every double play last season that McNeil was a part of as a runner.
Yeah.
Like where he was running from first to second. And apparently McNeil does not break up double plays. There was he turns off. He slides early. He like,
okay, I thought it was going to go the other way. I thought you were going to say that he got exposed for being a hypocrite.
I don't realize he's supposed to do that.
I guess I give credit for being consistent, though, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, you are a man of your word there, saying that, you know, if you don't do it, you don't think others should. Now, listen, just because you don't do something doesn't mean that others can't. And there are rules against it going in too hard. And I'm not of the mind that it was like better when guys were, you know, blasting in the players and trying to bust their legs. Like, I don't think taking out a player trying to make a double play who's not really paying attention to the guy barrel rolling into him, I don't find that tough. I know it's like, oh, it was hard nose back then. No, it wasn't. It was taking advantage of somebody who was focused on doing something else. It was pretty bitch made, just like throwing a bunch of baseballs at people when they have success against you. Like, I'm sorry, that stuff is not tough.
You want to hear something really bad?
Let's hear it.
I break up double plays in slow pitch softball.
Oh my god, you piece of shit.
Now, I'm not wearing spikes.
I was going to say,
I'm not going to hurt anybody
over at second and short.
But like, if it's a close play, like, yeah, you're not.
I would put my lanky arms up when I would slide sometimes, but I'm only putting myself at risk because if they fire that ball into my arm, you know it's going to shatter. I'm 6'5", 165, so I'm really only putting myself at risk on that. But we're not putting our teams at risk with Cole Irvin.
I've seen someone like get their orbital bone broken because they didn't slide. So I slide every fucking time.
Oh yeah, I don't mind getting down. I'm more the McNeil in softball where I'm gonna slide pretty early. But like I said, I'll throw my arms up maybe to try to distract a little bit. But again, probably only putting my arms at risk.
You're like the inflatable thing out in front of a car.
Call myself that all the time.
A lot, yeah.
Yep. Yep, that's exactly the comparison that I am
doing it. Unless you're watching the
YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, we are doing the inflatable man in front of the used car lot. But again, like I said, we're not going to risk our teams with Cole Irvin. What about Brian Bello? Now, this might be one where people say, "I thought you weren't including the studs." I'm not quite there. I think it is at least worth having a talk about. Now, 15s. We just talked about how there's not a whole lot of depth. I don't think you really have the choice. I think you got to keep rolling with him. It is Baltimore and the Angels both at home. But I want to talk about Bayo in the 10 and 12 team context. We are seeing some interesting factors. One positive, 14% swinging strike rate, up 3 points from last year. Problem is, it's only netting a 19% K rate. And this is two starts, so we're parsing tiny, tiny samples here with Brian Bayo. Another positive factor, 2% walk rate. So the core skills are looking strong so far, but it's been kind of like, I don't know. Is Bayo somebody that you are kind of standard trusting in 10s and 12s right now, especially with a two-step at home that includes Baltimore? And then, of course, the Angels is probably that's the easier one. What do you think about Brian Bayo right now?
A little concerned about the command. I mean, giving up almost 3 home runs per 9 at this point. Obviously super, super early, but the command has been a little bit an issue of him hitting his spots within the zone. He's not walking guys, like you said, right? The control's fine.
Yeah, so he's just peppering the zone, maybe. He gave up 2 homers to Oakland.
Yeah.
You're fired for that, Bayo.
They weren't good homers either. It wasn't like, oh, that guy just got him, right? It was like meatballs that he left kind of over the center of the plate. So a little concerned with Bayo, but like not overly concerned. And swing strike rate, is 14%. So I think a strikeout rate comes up. Like I said, he's not walking guys. The top half of this matchup is a little bit scary because Baltimore, though, I don't know what's scarier, Baltimore's major league team or Baltimore's AAA team.
AAA. Yeah,
that team is freaking scary. it's crazy.
They're outscoring Baltimore, the Ravens right now, the Baltimore Ravens.
They're outscoring the Washington Wizards right now. So,
they're going absolutely crazy down there in AAA.
What's amazing is that they're gonna they don't need to make as many trades as maybe people think they do, because they're just gonna get an influx of talent. Here in the next month or two,
they're just gonna bring up guys. The only thing they might need is another arm, which they can leverage that talent for. But yeah, Baltimore's scary, but I think push come to shove, I go with Bayo, but I wanted to put him on just to have the kind of talk, make sure you're still pretty confident in him in 10s and 12s. And it sounds like
I think in 10s, it really depends on my other options, but in 12s, most 12s, the Angel start is too juicy.
You certainly wouldn't cut him in a 10 that you're not using him, right? At least a team streamer for Brian Bayo. Okay, just making sure. We're on the same page there. It's not like he's been horrendous. It's just one of those kind of check-ins early on, like, hey, we still like him, right? Okay, so Brian Bayo, we're cool with mostly starting. If you have a deep roster rotation in 10s, you can maybe bench him, but we're not cutting him anywhere. Javier Assad gets trips to San Diego and Seattle. Any interest there? It's again deep leagues, 15 teamers, don't have a ton on the wire. Is that bringing you any intrigue with Javier Assad?
Assad looked good in that first start, and while these are two teams that offenses that can get going, they haven't really gotten going that much. Outside of Tatis just being a monster, because Tatis is just a monster.
He is a god.
And these are great parks. So a guy like Assad, who gives up a lot of contact, like I'm less concerned about him in these parks, especially early on in the season when the weather helps kind of keep things a little dampered down offensively. So I think he's normally I would probably like if this was in June, I'd probably say no way. But it being April, I might actually roll with this one in like a 15. I don't think 10s and 12s I'm rolling with a thought.
No.
In a 15, I think because there probably aren't a ton of options on your team, like I think Assad's in consideration here.
I think he's at least in consideration. I'm not dying to do this with Javier Assad at San Diego and at Seattle, but I agree for the points that you've made that, hey, it's on the board right now because that board is lacking options. So, you know, you mentioned that in the league that you were talking about that we were looking at, you had a ton of relievers, a bunch of specs that you were making, and you haven't cut them yet. And as you kind of look to move on from some of these guys, what can you really get? Are you going to be able to get pitchers? Yeah. Is Javier Assad that, you know, the type of guy that you're going to get? Are you going to have to pivot toward hitters? And so the options just might not be that deep. So maybe you take a shot on somebody like Assad. Let's jump to Cincy. They've got two guys getting the same matchups. They get Milwaukee at home, who we've already talked about a bit, and then a trip to the White Sox, which is obviously the juicy one here. Can Graham Ashcraft and Frankie Montas basically survive the home start to get the hot, you know, weekend start in Chicago against the White Sox? Now, Montas is somebody I've talked about him before. I love him. Love him, love him, love him. But only rooting for him from afar this year because I do not trust pitchers in Cincinnati. Ashcraft is frustrating because as a guy that you watch and you see his stuff, it's nasty. 100-mile-an-hour sinkers that move all over the place. Maybe move too much. Maybe he can't. Maybe the problem is he can't reel them in is the issue. But a decent first start for him, decent couple starts for Montas. Where do you stand on these two, Graham Ashcraft, Frankie Montas?
Montas I'm really interested in, and I might roll him out in this one, even though the first start's at home and second start's not in a great park either. But the White Sox are so bad, and while Milwaukee's hitting well, like they're not an offense that I'm necessarily running away from.
Not with the guy you would like.
Yeah, and I mean Montas has pitched well, though. Like the underlying metrics are not like as great as you would like think from kind of the first two opening starts. You know, swing strike rate 11.5%, and he's got 100% strand rate. He's got a 250 BABIP. Like he's getting lucky.
We cooked Washington in the first one. Montas did, and then
didn't look like overly dominant. A lot of that was, if you go back and watch that start, a lot of it was like Washington sucks.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm trying to say. Because it's only four strikeouts, no walks, four hits. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he didn't give up much of anything because Washington stinks. And then against Philly in Philly, so he got another difficult matchup in a difficult spot, but that was weather, bad weather. Mm-hmm. So 8 base runners, only one scored in 5 2/3 with 5K. So, you know, survived. It was solid. And he has 2 wins, great ratios. Frankie Montas is 39% rostered on the composite ESPN Yahoo, according to Fantasy Pros. Is he somebody you're picking up in the 10s and 12s? Is he on your consideration list for that?
I think he's a straight-up streamer. Like, I think you pick him up for starts you want to use him at, but there are going to be so many starts you don't want to use him because you're probably not going to try to use him at home.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to use him on every road start. Like if, you know, he goes to Colorado or
I wouldn't have used him in Philly. I was scared of that start.
I wouldn't have used him in Philly either. So I just think that a guy like that, where you're conceivably only picking him up for maybe like 2/5 of his starts, like you can't hold on to that. Like that is a guy in a 10 team or 12 team league where you kind of drop and you pick back up later.
Is there a path where Montas is great again, though?
Absolutely. I don't think it's going to happen. Like okay. I said, like I've watched both his starts, and neither of them were like particularly impressive from the
correct. I agree with that.
So, like, do I like? But we have seen Frankie Montas like be a top 30 starter before, or at least from an eye test. You know, skills perspective, prior to the injury, like we've seen him do it. So it wasn't a great park. And there, like, even in those times, there were massive inconsistencies because the splitter is such a difficult pitch to command. So I think that it's just a streamer. Like even like a 15 team, he's a team streamer, and a 10 and 12, he's a regular streamer.
Agreed. And I'd probably consider this week a decent bit for Montas,
especially because the White Sox start. If you're in a daily lineups league and you can skip the Milwaukee over that start, like then I'm totally, I would definitely start him against Chicago, against the White Sox on the road. So
agreed. Yeah. What about Ashcraft? First start, not too bad. You know, 21% K, 4% walk, six innings. Took the loss, but certainly wasn't bad. I've talked about the frustration with him. Had a interesting season last year where the start was actually pretty good. It went completely south in May, just horrendous. Cut in every league, nobody's holding him. And then a really strong summer that probably pissed off those people that cut him. Like, where was that when I had you, Graham? But yeah, he closed out with 12 starts of a 2.58 ERA in his final 77 innings. I got him on the
tail end, which is fantastic. Yeah.
You know, the people that benefited from that were like, oh, I got positive thoughts about Graham Ashcraft. But he's inconsistent. Has the same issue where he's got to, you know, pitch in that Cincy ballpark. What are we doing with Graham Ashcraft right now? Obviously, we want the White Sox start where we can get it, but what about where you're tied into both? Do you take the two-step gamble with Graham Ashcraft?
God, that's really tough. I think it is really team-dependent. I think in 10s and 12s, probably not. And in 15s, like, you're probably rolling the dice. But for me, it really depends on what the options are. Because, like, I just mentioned, you know, like the strand rate and the BABIP for Montas, kind of saying, hey, he's getting a little bit lucky. Graham Ashcraft is getting even luckier. I mean, we're talking about like a guy who has a 125 BABIP and a 91.
It's only been one start. Let's be careful, but yeah, it was.
He gave up two home runs in that one start too. So, you gave up two home runs in that one start. You know, it worked out like fine, but like I feel like you're walking a tightrope with Graham Ashcraft, and that just scares the crap out of me. So I don't. If I had to do both in a 10 or a 12, I don't think I would.
I don't think so either. He might be on my consideration list, but I'm really. Like in 10s and 12s, I think sometimes we forget because you and I play a lot of deeper ones, like what's out there. And just to kind of give you one name for an example, Tanner Houck is 24% rostered in the ESPN Yahoo composite. So, you know, he's super available and there's a lot of guys like that. So,
but again, like if this is a league where you've got the daily lineups, right? Like I'm starting him at Chicago.
Get that Chicago start. Yeah. Definitely. We do like that for both Montas and Ashcraft, but we're trying to avoid that Milwaukee start. And in 15s, I think you're taking a shot to get the White Sox start. I think I might take the Milwaukee one for both. Reese Olson gets a trip to Pittsburgh and then hosts Minnesota. 15s, obvious, so we're not even focused there. What about in the shallower formats for Reese Olson where he is 12% rostered at ESPN and Yahoo?
Yeah, I think I'm starting him. I know Pittsburgh's offense has been really, really good to start, but Minnesota's hasn't been. And I just think, like, he's one of those guys that I don't think Reese Olson helps you, but he doesn't hurt you. Like, and the Tigers are starting off pretty strong. That bullpen looks really good. And I think you could get two dubs. So, or at least one dub and be in consideration for two. So, I mean, they were undefeated until yesterday.
Shut up.
So, I mean, dubs aplenty. I'm still not a very big fan of Reese Olson from a pitching perspective, but like he is a usable starter, especially in a 15. But I think even in a 10 or 12, like I wouldn't mind streaming, especially the back half of this two-step, but even the front half, like at Pittsburgh, like fine.
Yeah, because it's at Pittsburgh. Like we respect Pittsburgh's offense. You've been on that since fall, really saying that they could be a sneaky solid team. And, you know, they are, but they're not a team that you still have to run from, especially in their home ballpark. I like Reese Olson. The tough part is like we are open to using him in a 10 and 12, but again, there's going to be a lot of talent available. So you got to kind of make your picks based on who's available in your league. Tyler Anderson, gets Tampa Bay and a trip to Boston. We're looking 15 team only here. Great debut. Also had a sneaky strong spring. I don't think we really ever talked about him. He's kind of off the radar. Tyler Anderson, 34 years old, you know, a couple years removed from that big breakout with the Dodgers now. But he went into spring and had a big 28% K rate, 4% walk, and 28% swinging strike rate. That is weird when your strikeout rate and your swinging strike rate match. But he looked sharp. And then 13% swinging strike rate here in his season debut with 7 innings of work. Any interest here with Tyler Anderson in deeper formats?
So, you know, I was a little bummed this year because, like, I just didn't have the time to write some of the articles that I wanted to write. Like, I didn't do a bold predictions article. I didn't do a this year's Mullins or this year's blah, blah, blah. And I can't remember which article it was last year, but it was like a this year's player, and it was a player that used to be good and everybody forgot that they used to be good. And it was going to be Tyler Anderson centric because I feel like he, like last year, like he was a top 30 starter in drafts, and that went horribly, horribly wrong. Yeah.
Who couldn't have seen that coming?
Yeah, I mean, everybody saw it coming. Actually, because I don't think he was a top 30 starter because everybody saw it coming.
But it was way worse than even the detractors thought. That's the thing. Yes. He completely fell apart. Tyler Anderson did.
And I just went, like, he can't be this bad, right? Like, is he this bad? Like, and so, like, he was a popular DC pick for me, right? Like, you know, when you're talking about getting a guy who's going to be in the rotation every 5 to 6 days in LA, like, he, you know, with that contract, he's pitching as long as he's healthy. And you need those kind of guys in DCs. And I think on Potapalooza, I was part of a bold predictions panel, and I was like, my bold prediction is Tyler Anderson's a top 50 starter this year.
Oh, damn. Okay. Just
because he's going to volume his way into, like, being useful in fantasy. And so as long as it's not atrocious. In a 15, I think I would, yeah.
Because there's going to be availability. Let me see. He's not very highly rostered. He's 7% rostered at the main event.
Yeah. So, I mean, you'll definitely have availability. I'll throw a little bit of money at. As far as these two starts, like Tyler Anderson going up against Tampa Bay and at Boston, that's pretty scary. But
it's not great.
Tampa's not as strong right now as they normally are. So, like, I don't actually mind it as much, but the Boston part is the scary part for me because Boston had, like, last season, like, crushed left-handed pitching. And
in Fenway, too.
It's in Fenway. So I don't know if I would start it, but I think he will be on a part of my waterfalls this weekend in my main event where I'm trying to drop some of those relievers.
Yep, same here. I don't know that he's going to be at the top of the list, but Tyler Anderson will be in the lists. And, you know, I talked about multiple times that I open up the thresholds a little bit early on. Got to be careful, though. You don't want to get hammered twice because then you're really making up for things. And it will be a one and done, even if you do pick them up in 15s, because Tyler Anderson goes to Cincinnati next week or the week after next, I should say. James Paxton gets a trip to Minnesota and then hosts San Diego. Again, this is 10s and 12s that we're focused on because he's an automatic in 15s. While upright, I'm very interested in James Paxton, even in shallower formats. Do you think he's a big consideration in 10s and 12s?
I mean, I think he should be because, again, pitching for the Dodgers, may win like 145 games this year.
So. He's only 17% rostered by the Fantasy Pros Composite, which, again, uses ESPN and Yahoo. I mean, even if that's short, even if it's, you know, 30%, that still means he's super available. I like Paxton. I think he should be rostered in more of those shallow leagues just while he's at least healthy.
Yeah, I completely agree. My shtick this year is going to be every time we talk about the Dodgers, I'm just going to add more wins.
I love it. You should have started lower, though, because you're already at 145.
I know. We're going to go way over 200.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're going to win 217 games. And he gets the Mets the following week, Paxton does. So
until he gets hurt, he's like a team streamer in 10s until he gets hurt. Like, just you want a piece of the Dodgers rotation.
And it's a cheap way to get in.
And Paxton is one of those guys that when he pitches, he's good usually.
Jacob Junis at Cincy at Baltimore. Now, that used to be the hellscape, right? We've talked a ton about how at Baltimore isn't so bad. I think the at Cincy is enough to scare you. But what about in 15s with Junis? Any interest?
I've got a little bit of interest. Like, Junis looked pretty good, especially early on versus the Twins. The problem was he only went four innings. And so, like, is he going to qualify for a win? Like,
that's
is he
the tough go part.
Deep enough?
He's in the Dane Dunning camp for me. I can't really crystallize why I like him and why he's kind of good, but he's kind of good. Like, he's solid. Like, he's a solid major leaguer. And with us being deep league dorks, like, that's the kind of guy that's more on our radar than he probably should be.
Well, he changed his pitch mix this year. He's throwing the sinker a lot more. And the sinker looks really, really good. And so, like, he got strikeouts in that first start against
and a 19% swinging strike rate for
Junis. I think legit. The problem is, like, I just don't know how deep into the game Junis will go regularly, because
so you might not get dubs.
Yeah, which is hard, because you might, if you're in a 10 and 12, you're really looking for dubs. Like,
yeah, you know. Oh, I'm thinking more 15 here, because he's going to be available 15, in our main events.
I think 15, you would probably start him.
Let me look up Jakob Junis. 26% rostered, so super available.
Yeah. So I should have my sad page open so I can add these guys. That's what we thought.
I do. Whenever we do the two-star episode, I have it open, and I've added a bunch of these guys already. Jakob Junis. I don't know why I call him that. It's just in my head. I always call him that.
I love it. That's actually really funny.
old Jakob Junis. I'm definitely considering him.
He's got the Jacob with a K.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, and it makes me think, yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those dumb things that I do in my head. But yeah, I'm interested even with the trip to Cincy, because I know the trip to Baltimore is scary too. It's a scary two-step, but he's going to be in my waterfall because he looked pretty solid against Minnesota. He's a guy I've liked in the past, and I just got a bit of a weakness for him. So Jakob Junis, I'm at least considering him. Deep leagues only, 10s and 12s, you'll have way more talent that you don't even have to worry about this. Let's jump back to the 10s and 12s, though, for these two considerations in Minnesota. Louis Varland and Chris Paddock. They get a trip to Detroit, Justin. But before that, you have to face the Dodgers at home. So is the risk? Okay, you're flat out because of that. Obviously, in dailies, we like the Detroit start for both. But you're not taking the two-step in a 10 and 12?
I'm not going up against the Dodgers.
I'm not either. Like, I'm with you.
There are like 15, maybe 20 starters.
Yep.
That I would put Max. In versus the because you like Logan Webb was one of them, and look what they did. Like,
I'll put him in again against them, but yes, he is. We saw what they did to our boy Webb. Like,
it was his scary. First start that he didn't go five innings in like a year and a half.
It's terrifying what they can do.
Like, I'm not kidding when I think, like obviously they're not going to win 145 games, but like, I think they're gonna like flirt with the record.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised.
Is like, unless they get just like murdered by injuries or something like that, which can obviously happen to anybody. Like, I think legitimately this has the potential to be best team ever in baseball. I hope they still lose in the first round of the playoffs, but
we know you would love that.
But like, I'm legitimately afraid. Like, this is a team that could win 130 games.
Yeah, they're insane. So I love Varland. I've got some interest in Paddock this year. I do not want to touch that LA start to get the Dodgers or to get the Tigers start. What about in the 15s where your options are less? Are you sitting those two guys this week?
Yeah, I'm not starting him.
Okay. Just making sure that it was 15s as well.
Like, NL only is like the place. Or AL
only. AL only.
But yeah, is the place where I would, because you have to pretty much.
You pretty much have to take that opportunity there. But other than that, I agree with you. I think you're going to feel similarly about this other guy who also has like kind of an interesting weekend start, but you have to go to Atlanta to get the KC start for Adrian Hauser. Are you doing it in 15s?
Nope.
Okay, same reasoning. We're just going to move on because, he's an interesting, decent streamer.
And Kansas City is not a rollover either.
I agree.
We're just talking about Mikel Garcia and and other guys on this team that even haven't gotten going. Like, there's no way I would start a guy like Hauser at Atlanta.
Yeah, they'd have to be really, really bad, KC. to take the Atlanta start, and they're not right now. So I agree with that. Nestor Cortez, again, this is kind of in that Brian Bale where it's like obvious in 15s you're starting him, but I want to check in on Nestor Cortez, see where you're at. He gets Miami and a trip to Cleveland. Cleveland's on fire right now, but they're still not a team that we're generally super afraid of, and Miami's been a nightmare. So what are you doing with Nasty Nestor here in the shallower formats?
So I did not start him this week versus the Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in that game, he looked really, really bad, and he got better as the game went on. So,
same thing in the Houston start, by the way.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is – well, this is weird, too, because I was about to say, I don't know if this is a cold weather thing, but I think both of those – both those stadiums, I think Arizona had their roof open that day, but like
they did.
Arizona,
but it's not cold in there. Yeah, exactly. It's not,
so, and the first series was in Houston, so that roof was closed.
But just so two bumpy early innings. First inning for both. He allowed
and the velocity down both times and started to recover throughout the game. I just don't know quite what's going on. So like I said, I did not start him in my main event, which is a 15.
What about the two-step now, though, with Nestor? Because you get Miami.
Well, I thought I was getting a two-step on that one originally. So
he got moved.
I think he got pushed back. So I think Miami and Cleveland are two good starts that you shouldn't pass up. Like, I know that we talked yesterday, Cleveland's, like, leading baseball in run differential.
Yeah,
but
come on.
I'm not worried about Cleveland at all. Like, you know, when Andrés Giménez is batting .386.
Okay, you don't got to take a shot at him, though. He's one of their good
Brian guys. Rocchio is batting, like, you know,
you don't got to take a shot at
90s.
Him. I like him.
I just find somebody picked up Rocchio, actually. So
yeah, let me find who can you...
Austin Hedges.
Stephen Kwan hitting .385 right now. Yeah, Austin.
Stephen Kwan could hit .385. He's got a better chance of hitting .385 than
maybe I should have brought his .513 slug. Maybe I should have brought up his .513
slug. Our source, Stephen Kwan.
No, he does have a homer. Mm-hmm. Stephen Kwan does have a homer. So we're not worried about Cleveland. I think this is the time you get back in on Nasty Nestor. Cortez has had two bad first innings, stabilized for four innings after both of them. He's a little scary.
Against really good teams.
Exactly. Against Arizona and Houston, this is Miami and Cleveland. I think you got to take the shot here.
Yeah.
Because if you're not starting him, you should cut him. And I think he's a good consideration in 10s and 12s, too.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. We move on to our next guy, which is Alex Wood. Okay. At Texas and Washington, or at Texas home to Washington.
If you can get the home to Washington start, I would consider it. But I also want to remind people that Washington was really good against left-handed pitching last year.
No, I just wanted to see if you were in at all.
Yeah, no.
Spencer Turnbull, great first start. Had him on my bench. Wanted to just kind of wait and see. But at St. Louis and home to Pittsburgh.
You know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, of
great
course.
First start that was on your bench, and you're going to roll him out for the two start. He's going to get
obviously
slacked.
That's going to happen.
But you got to start him.
Like, I'm still going to do it. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying don't start him in a 15, but in a 10 and 12, I'm probably not doing it.
There'll be too much other talent. What's he got to do? What's Turnbull got to do to get on that 15 and, or 10 and 12 radar for you?
Really show that he can consistently go five. And miss bats. He did it in that first start, so I mean, it's like seven strikeouts
and it was against Cincinnati, but it's a nasty weather game too, so I think that the pitchers had an advantage.
Beat up right now, like, and
yeah,
and is a team that can strike out quite a bit when you've got Ellie De La Cruz, like six of those strikeouts.
Will Benson, kind of swing and miss type of guy. Yeah, they got some swing and miss type guys there.
And the swing strike rate is under 10%, so it's not like, I think he was probably just getting some calls and stuff like that. But he's definitely a guy who should be on, like, he should be rostered in 15s and probably on your radar for 12s. Yeah. So, I don't think I'm starting him here in 10s or 12s, but
I don't think you have to with Turnbull.
I think he's a guy who should be on your watch list. Wait for a better start. Yeah.
Yes. And I've mentioned before, I love using the watch list feature on sites. It's usually like a little eye or like a checkbox that you can put for these guys so you don't forget. And so put Turnbull on that and just kind of see what's up, because St. Louis, Pittsburgh, two solid lineups. We talked about Pittsburgh earlier where they're like KC. You used to think, oh, auto start against them. Now you want to tap the brakes a little bit. If he does well against St. Louis and Pittsburgh, though, all of a sudden I do start considering Spencer Turnbull quite a bit more in 12s. Mm-hmm. Mitch Keller's another one of those Brian Bayo-esque, Nestor Cortez-esque check-ins here where I want to see where you're at. Detroit and at Philly, 15s, again, I don't really think you have a choice but to go with him. 10s and 12s, where are we at on Mitch Keller after a couple starts?
This is one of those, like, what does your team need kind of questions, right? Like, because
yeah.
Mitch Keller's like, hey, if you need strikeouts and you need wins, like, you could probably get that with Mitch Keller. If you need to protect your ratios a little bit, you probably shouldn't be starting Mitch Keller. So I think that is kind of the discussion you need to have with yourself. Like, looking at your rotation, what does your rotation need? Do you have a bunch of resource and types where you go like, hey, this guy's not going to give me a lot of strikeouts, but he is going to like be a decent ratio stabilizer? Mm-hmm. Or do you have a bunch of Bayos already? And it's like, I think when people draft 10s and 12s, they draft the Bayos, the Mitch Keller types, because they're like, hey, I'm just looking for someone who's going to click. Well, compiling those guys together could leave you with a really bad whip or a really bad ERA. So I think you really got to look at your roster and kind of make a decision based on like the overall makeup of that rotation. That being said, like, yeah, the Pirates are good, man, and he's going to get strikeouts. So, and he's going to go deep into games for those of you who play quality starts leagues, even though you shouldn't be playing quality start leagues anymore because nobody gets quality starts anymore.
Well, but, yeah, they're just as difficult as wins leagues now.
Yeah, well, they might as well be saves leagues. Yeah, I think it's definitely a team roster construction issue rather than a talent issue. But this is the Mitch Keller experience, right? Like I know there are Mitch Keller apologists out there, but he's like one of those guys like, hey, any given day, he can just go out there and throw dominant innings. And any day he can go out there and just get blown up. Doesn't matter the matchup. Doesn't matter the park.
Like, he's pretty volatile.
He is, you do not know what you're going to get. But if you look at the end of the season line, you go, hey, I got 200 plus strikeouts. And yeah, it was a 4 ERA. But on Pittsburgh, he's probably going to get 13, 14 wins.
I was not super keen on Keller coming into the year. And I'm not taking any sort of victory lap. What I'm saying is, if you were, I think you stand by your man. Stick with your guy here.
Sure.
And keep rolling him out. Detroit and at Philly, you know, we talked about Detroit a bunch. They're not that scary. That's not why they're succeeding. The offense is not why they're succeeding. And a trip to Philly is not easy. It's a little bit scary, but I think you got to go with Mitch Keller because, like Justin's saying, you could probably still get 5, 6, 7 Ks even if he only ends up going 4 or 5 innings. So stick with your guy. See where he's at. Reassess him after 5, 6, 7 starts, not after 2. He gets Boston the week after in at home, at least, thankfully, for Mitch Keller. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Blake Snell, obviously, we're starting him. Or I should say, I don't know for sure, but we know his timetable now. He's going to debut on Monday. He gets Washington and a trip to Tampa Bay. Do you think there's going to be any restrictions? Are you concerned here? Is there any situation where you're sitting Blake Snell? Or is it all systems go for you where you have him?
I think it's all systems go.
Me too. I just wanted to make sure.
I mean, I have concerns. But not necessarily. My concerns were with drafting him at his price.
Yeah, they're not actionable concerns once you have him.
Yeah, now that you have him, he's yours, and that's your man. You got to play him. Like, I just, especially when the starts are, you know, at home at Tampa, like two really really good parks. You're going up against the Nationals. If you're not starting Blake Snell with the Nationals and Tampa Bay, a beat up Tampa Bay team, why'd you draft Blake Snell? So like I know there probably are some concerns of like, well, how deep is he going to go in his first few starts? I don't think that's going to be a major issue. Like, there was reports before he signed that he, you know, he was throwing like 5 inning simulated games. Exactly. And then they held him out for the first week of the season to continue to build him up. Like, I think he's going to be, I think if he's pitching well, he will go 5.
Yeah. Like, if he's Blake Snell, he's got 5 easy.
The problem is Blake Snell walks so many guys.
It could be 4.
It could be 4. Yeah.
But it won't be tight management. It's not going to be 70 pitches type thing. That's what we're saying. And that's why I wanted to bring him up to make sure that you were on that same page.
He probably goes nine against Tampa just to prove a point. Like there's like 250 pitches.
Like, and then double birds, Kevin Cash.
The manager comes out to like take the ball from him in the like the fifth inning.
Get back to the dugout. Like,
look at my contract. It says in my contract that I get to go.
Did you read the fine print? Tampa Bay. Against Tampa Bay, I take myself out, which is never. But yeah, I'm rooting for Blake. I hope he has two nice starts. I didn't get him anywhere. The thing was he never really had a discount. And like I get it, he's the reigning Cy Young, so why should he? Like, why are we, do a discount for him or not? I was hoping that the fantasy community would tamp his price down a little bit because
I was never drafting him, not anyways, but
well, I would have with a discount, but it never came. And so I didn't end up getting any Blake Snell, but I do root for him, and I hope he does well for your Giants. I just kind of want to test you with this one. I know the answer is no, but
no,
I just
wanted to see. Answer is no. No.
Andrew Heaney gets Houston twice.
When I saw his name on the list, I was like, well, I guess it depends on who he's owned. Never mind.
Yeah, because it's a wraparound series for Monday. He ends up getting Houston twice, the same reason that Fromberg gets Texas twice. And it's a home and home. Obviously, that doesn't change anything. But yeah, I just wanted to see if there was anything that I could get you to do to go back to your old man, Andrew.
Maybe
Heaney.
If I start drinking again this weekend, like, I could do it.
If Justin falls off the way, if you see Heaney in a Justin Mason lineup, he has fallen off the wagon. Please call me. Yeah. I need to get him his help. Mm-hmm. Shit has gone sideways. I'm not trying to make light of alcoholism, but Justin.
I mean, I think of all people, I'm allowed to make light of.
That's what I was gonna say. That's what I was saying. Yeah. It's your battle. You are allowed to make those jokes. I will say this. Let's not joke for a second. 7 punchies in 4 2/3 at Tampa.
If it wasn't Houston, I
was
going to
say, is
it
just
because
it's Houston? Okay.
Yeah. That's what I said. Like when I first saw the name, I was like, oh, it depends on who he's going up against. And then I saw who he's going up against. I'm like, I'm not starting twice against Houston. Like that's just, even if he survives one of them, he's going to get murked in the other. So
you would think he has to get hit in one of them. If you have a spot in a deeper league where you're just like, I got a free spot to stash. Is there a world where you pick him up? Don't play Heaney. And then stash him for the trip to Detroit next week?
Yes. Okay. I would do that, yeah.
Maybe get ahead of it, right? Because in some of these deeper leagues, people are looking ahead, and you got to jump. Because if he does end up making Justin and I look stupid, and he does do well twice against Houston, then that Detroit start's going to cost you $90 out of 1,000.
Then he's going to be 10-team, 12-team viable.
Yeah, so. But this week he'll be cheap because I don't think people are really going to be after him, even with a 2-step. No. So, okay. And for those of you that haven't listened to us long, Justin used to love Andrew Heaney. So we really did something.
I still love Andrew Heaney.
I know you do. Like, I know you do. But not the way you used to.
I have PTSD from loving Andrew.
A couple years ago, you're starting him at Houston for these starts. Probably. Yeah, that's how deep your love was a couple years ago.
I mean,
so.
But I've been abused. Like,
yes. You guys are now in like a bad marriage where you're like, oh, I hate him. But I stay begrudgingly with him.
He still has my CDs. I can't leave out my CDs.
I got to get my CDs back. You know, I've been seeing a lot of like articles and like podcasts about physical media and like kind of the death of it. It's funny that you bring that up. Like my brother-in-law collects Blu-rays and DVDs just to have stuff because things can disappear now with all the digital. Like, I see the positives in digital. Like I have a PlayStation that is digital only.
But like we were talking the other day about Community coming off of Netflix.
Yes.
It's like, well, now I got to cancel Netflix. Like,
which I did. And it's funny because the brother-in-law that I just mentioned said, you need to get that Blu-ray. You need to get the physical so you don't have to have whatever system or whatever service it's on. But yeah, you know.
Because like there was, we were trying to like find like, it was like a Christmas like special or something like that. Like, maybe the Rudolph or the Frosty, whatever, for my kids during Christmas. And you couldn't find it anywhere. Like it wasn't on any streaming services. And like my brother was, well, I'll just pirate it. Like, I hate doing that. Like I know a lot of people are fine with it, but like it is like straight up stealing. And I'm just not like,
yeah. And I'm not going to sit here and like be on my high horse. Like I've never done it. I want to pay for things though. Like,
yeah,
I'd rather go the right way with things.
You're right. Like,
but
the physical copies of stuff is nice.
Sometimes
to have,
I'm left
for,
with... go ahead.
I would say physical copies are like, sometimes it's nice to have because you get like, you know you've got it forever. The problem is then you have to keep a DVD player or a CD player around.
True. And that is the tough part. But I'm becoming more and more interested in at least maybe having that and starting to collect some of my favorite movies and whatnot, because they can just disappear. Yeah. There's like so much lost media now. And I the most recent conversation that I heard around it was actually yesterday when I was doing the lawn, was about video games and how those can disappear now too, if they just take them offline and they're just gone. And it's like, oh my God, I spent all this time and effort into this video game and it's just gone. I can't just fire up the cartridge whenever I want. So, you know, there's a lot of positives on the digital stuff, but there's
some negatives. We sound like old guys now.
No, I understand, but I don't think it's just boomer yelling at cloud. Like, I think that there are some downsides with this because these streamers have so much power to just take shit off and disappear it, yeah. You know? And so that is a bit of a problem. So anyway,
speaking of old guys, physical
media. Yeah, Trevor Williams finishing up. He gets the old Bay Area two-step here with the at San Francisco, at Oakland. Is there any 15 team love? We've been talking all episode about how there's not too much out there in 15 teams. Is this an enticing enough situation here that you would even look at Trevor Williams?
I think it is. He's not even crazy.
Available in my. Oh, you know what? Jeff Zimmerman has him. I bet Jeff Zimmerman picked him up for this. He jumped him a week early.
I'm sure he did. But because I want to say, let's see, he's only rostered in 4%. Is he starting him this week? Because he is started in 2% of mains.
Let me see if ours is the 2%.
Because that would have been a pretty sneaky start, because he had a good start.
Who was it against?
He threw against Pittsburgh.
He did start him.
So he is the one person in the main event.
So maybe he did pick him up for this, but knowing that he could even keep him for next week with the Bay Area two.
That's a ballsy start against a good Pittsburgh team like that.
Right. Five and a third, five punches in the dub, though, two earned. So what are we doing with Trevor Williams on the heels of that? He's available everywhere else. Are you looking at this with San Francisco and Oakland? Obviously, we know Oakland stinks. Your Giants are not scary offensively, right? No. That's not their calling card.
I don't have a problem with this. Swing strike rate was at 10%, which normally be like, oh, well, who cares? Like, but that's actually better than it was last year. It was at 8% last year.
Yeah, that's fine for Trevor Williams.
And like, these are both really good parks to travel to. So, yep. I mean, 10s and 12s, you probably have better options because like, this is like the anti-Dodgers, like where you're not wind seeking, you're wind praying, but
yes.
Maybe you get a win against Oakland, right? And there's a world where the Giants like go cold or whatever, and
he could beat the Giants.
You know, Blake Snell, I think, is the opposite pitcher.
Oh yeah, that's true. So
you're probably not getting a win, but like, hey, there are plenty of games where Blake Snell just walks the yard, and all of a sudden, like, you know, an error or two. Like, this is one of the reasons that Blake Snell scares me in San Francisco is. That defense is still bad. Like, the infield defense is better.
Yeah, but the outfield
defense is rough. Like,
no, you're right on that.
I was talking on the RotoWire Sirius show the other day, and they were asking me about the Giants and about Junko Lee in particular, because Junko Lee has actually been a lot better offensively than I thought he was going to be. Like, I'm ready to take that L, I think, on Junko Lee.
It's a little early.
I've been impressed. I have been impressed with his ability to take walks and ability to make contact and some sneaky power in there. Hit a shot in San Diego that was really, really impressive. Now, it was a meatball, and I think a lot of guys can hit meatballs, like, you know, far. But defensively, he is rough. Like, there's no getting around. Like, defensively,
he's playing center, right?
Yeah.
That's the scary
part. It's him in Conforto in the outfield.
Yeah, and that's a vast amount of ground to cover.
Like, Yastrzemski's a decent defender in the outfield, but, like, the combination of Junko Lee and Michael Conforto defensively is going to cost. Remember a few years ago when Alex Cobb was, like, the unluckiest pitcher in baseball and everybody kept going, oh, he's going to turn it around, he's going to turn it around because, like, he's just getting unlucky. Well, sometimes there's a reason you're getting unlucky, and correct. It was the defense was the reason he was getting unlucky, and the defense... not much better, especially in the outfield.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with all of that. So And you did mention earlier in the episode that Washington, not too bad against lefties. So, mm-hmm. you know, it is Blake Snell. It's not going to be easy there. You're not looking for the win at the Giants. But if Trevor Williams gets you one win and 11 solid innings, you take that. And he's coming off a good start. So we are considering him in 15s. And again, 10s and 12s, there's just going to be way too much other talent to bank on. But he's on my 15-team radar, Trevor Williams. So there you go. There's the rundown of the two-step. A lot of interesting guys out there. It is early. Like I said, I open up my thresholds a little bit. Let's not get crazy with things. But you'll have more time to try to make things up if you do take a gamble on somebody.
I'm a little more conservative early on in the season than you.
And I understand.
On that RotoWire radio spot, like Todd did bring up a good point, like kind of that kind of, you know, push back at me is like the ERAs are lower in April. Like these are not weather. Bad times.
Hitters not caught up.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, I don't want to be put into a hole.
And I understand that. I am in a hole in some leagues already.
And I just hate having to, you know, last year, because of Michael Kopech specifically, but other guys, Lance Lynn, another guy.
But he really did a number.
But the combination of Lance Lynn and Michael Kopech being on a lot of teams, like I had to work hard to stream and kind of rebuild my ratios. Now I was able to do it. And so, but like, it means you're going to be spending a lot of time in Fab on your rotation. And I made a pledge that this year I was not going to do that again.
And I can respect that. I can totally respect that. Because it is scary and it is nerve wracking to then have to do that, because then you're trying to play catch up and then your bad risks feel even worse. Cause you're like, oh, I got to take a shot here on this guy. Maybe he can help me. And then every bad start feels even worse. So I get it. Again, don't get too crazy with it. Don't be a dumbass like me and start Patrick Sandoval at Baltimore. You know, that was dumb, but yeah, he looked good in Miami, which I do appreciate.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's fun to like make fun of you for it because I just like making fun of you because you're my friend and stuff. But like, I don't think it was necessarily that bad of a process because it was in Baltimore. That.
Yeah.
Like, I think ultimately, it's a good park. Like, you know, like,
it's a good offense. I wasn't like downing the offense. I just thought, maybe Sandoval.
But it's not like, it's not an offense where you look at it and you go, oh, that there's a bunch of dudes. It's not the Dodgers offense. There are some dudes, like, you know,
it will be
Rutschman
eventually, but not yet.
Yes. Rutschman and Henderson are dudes for sure. Mm-hmm. But like, Henderson struggles against lefties, and you know, Rutschman's only one guy. We just didn't know Anthony Santander was going to be a monster. To
Tony Taters, your boy. Yeah. Say we didn't know. Yeah. That's your guy.
Yeah. He's my boy. Westberg has been pretty darn good. Even Mateo has been like, you know, decent. And so like, I just think, yeah, you just got it was in the range of outcomes, and I don't think I would have done it just because I'm more conservative than you, but being aggressive early on, I can understand why you did it. It just didn't
pay off, but thankfully I stuck with them. That's the thing too. When you do go for somebody and they do give you a bad outing, don't overreact the other way and then say, well, now I can't start him. It's like, okay, well, I stuck with Sandoval and he bounced back nicely. So here we are now kind of at a neutral status, and we see where we go with Sandoval. I actually don't know who they have next week. Let me look at the Angels real quick. He gets Tampa Bay at home.
I don't mind that.
I don't either. And so I think in a couple of my leagues, I might have to, just because of options. Then he gets a trip to Tampa Bay and a trip to Cincy the following week.
Probably staying away from the Cincy one.
Probably depends how he does here against Tampa Bay, but yeah.
No, Cincy, like, it is a bad park, but, like, the lineup doesn't scare you quite as much. Like, the lineup is very much like a lot of the guys on that team, which is very hit or miss, right? Like,
and it's lefty. Like, he'll neutralize some of the lefties. Like,
yeah.
Fraley and Martini probably won't even play. Benson can be a bit neutralized. We don't even know what's up with Jamer right now. Obviously, India, CES, Ellie, Steer, like, those guys scare me for sure. But we'll mm-hmm. see. That's for next week, though. That's next Friday.
Yeah.
Justin, we will talk on Monday. Good luck with Fab and everything. You got something coming up with Jason this weekend?
I believe so, but I got to double check.
Okay. Sounds great. I'll talk to you on Monday.
Take it easy.